Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to our Hollywood special. This time we're going to have breakfast in Hollywood, and we're going to discover what goes on behind the scenes in Hollywood with sound engineers and a profile of Paulette Goddard and much, much more. But let's start off with breakfast in Hollywood.
Good morning from America's newest fine restaurant. On Vine Street between Hollywood and Sunset Boulevard, Kellogg's Pep and Procter & Gamble's Ivory Flakes serve you breakfast in Hollywood. Friends, people in the restaurant business are constantly having to replace their dishware. And that's why our old maestro won't be down with us this morning. He's at the dentist getting a couple of new plates. But we're all going to toe the mark around here while he's gone. In fact, we're limbering up our toes already because here comes that Mark right now. Yes, it's Tom's kid brother and substitute for today, Mark Brenneman.
Thank you, Johnny. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Oh, that's fine. Who said Tom? Ladies, good morning to you all. Gee, it's nice to be here at breakfast in Hollywood, even though I do know that my big brother back there in Encino, you know, he's the mayor of Encino. Did you know that? Huh?
No.
You've never heard the program. You didn't know that. Well, so what do you say we give Tom a big hand and hope he has a nice rest and that the dishware is getting along fine. And yes, they'll meet. Don't worry. When he closes down, they'll meet. What's your name?
Mrs. Jo Oppress from Burlington, Iowa.
From Burlington, Iowa.
Yes, sir.
Is that so? We have some more islands here. Who's there? Is this your family here, your group?
These are.
Mm-hmm. Let's get the name.
Mrs. Pete Oppress. Los Angeles.
From Los Angeles, not from Burlington.
No, they're my husband from Burlington.
Your husband? Which one's your husband?
He's not here. He's working.
Who's this? Oh. That's her husband. How'd you get in between?
Well, I like to be in between.
You like to be in between?
Uh-huh.
You've been doing that all your life?
Oh, yes, sir.
No wonder your husband goes to work early. That's right. What's
That's
your
right.
name?
John Caton.
John Caton. Where are you from, John?
San Jose.
San Jose, California. Who's this over here? Just a moment. We'll get around to you, too. What's your name?
This is John H. Caton.
John H. Caton. You're Mr. Caton's wife.
That's right.
You let this lady here?
Just for a little while.
Well, that's nice. Her husband goes to work early, so
yeah,
it's nice that you'll share it. That's fun. How about it, Johnny?
That's right.
That's good. You have a good breakfast? So what is your name?
Mrs. Perez.
And where are you from, Mrs. Perez?
Culver City.
Culver City. Well, you must have been the one that walked in. She's the one to cut up at 3:30.
Burlington, Iowa, Julia Hurst.
You're her husband.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad to see you here from Burlington. All you grand folks. And your name, please?
Sylvia Trachman.
You're the, where are you from?
Newark, New Jersey.
Newark, New Jersey. Good. How long have you been in Los Angeles?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. You intend to stay?
For 3 more weeks.
For 3 more weeks. Mm-hmm. You're not going to walk back, though, are you?
Oh, no. Not if I can get a train.
Not if you get a train. That's good. Well, I hope the train's running at that time. What's your name?
Irving Spitz.
Irving Spitz. Where are you from, Irving?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. Well represented here this morning. Your name?
Mrs. Irving Spitz.
Mrs. Irving Spitz. You're Mr. Spitz's wife.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting good, huh? Figured that one out all myself.
Mr. Martinell Class.
Where are you from, Mr. Class?
L.A.
L.A. How'd you get in here?
Mrs. Belly Class.
You're Mrs. Class. I see you here today.
Thank you.
Lewis Strachman, Newark, New Jersey.
Lewis Newark, New Jersey. You're with You're going back 3 weeks. Did you know that? I just thought I'd tell you, in case you didn't know it. Well, ladies, this morning, we'd like to give our salute to the men who won the victory. Today, we hail the 43rd Infantry Division, known as the Wing Victory Division. They fought through from the early dark days of the war in the Pacific to the successful recapture of Manila, Guadalcanal, the Russell Islands, Rendova, Munda, and Luzon were all battle points for these gallant soldiers. And to them we say thanks for the victory. Well, Johnny, I see we have some servicemen here this morning. Glad to see you here today, boys. Will you give your name, your place where you come from, and your name, please?
John Keaton, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Lincoln, Nebraska. That's so. I had a brother there who was there and served in Lincoln. He went to camp there. And what is your name?
Francis McCarthy.
Francis McCarthy. Where are you from, Francis?
Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca, New York. You're both lieutenants, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to make sure about that. Who are the ladies with you?
I'm Mrs. John Keaton.
This is John Teagan.
Yeah, and I'm with nylon.
She wants some nylon. You do, huh? Anyone here who doesn't? What is your name?
Mrs. Frances McCarthy.
Mrs. Frances McCarthy. I'm glad you boys brought your wives down here. You're glad to see the husbands back.
Oh, you bet.
Mm-hmm. Who are the sailors over here?
Roger McCarthy from Ithaca, New York.
You're the brother of the lieutenant here?
That's right.
I see you here today, boy.
Tom Matson of Milwaukee.
Hello, Tom. How are you? Hmm? Got some more servicemen here?
from Detroit, Corporal Harold L. Garrison, Marine Corps.
Marine Corps, yes, sir. And boy, look at all those ribbons. Your name?
John Pelton, South Bend, Indiana.
Yes, sir. Here's another. Hello, South Bend.
Newman Clark from Avoca, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, glad to see you, boy. I'm Pennsylvania, too. How are you, fella?
Oh, fine.
Who's this here?
Mrs. John Pelton.
You're here. Now, I want to keep them straight here.
Mrs. Harold Garrison from Detroit.
Who are you with her?
You're
with the Marines. Beg pardon, boy. I didn't have much breakfast. Now, who is this?
My name is Robert Cox, and I'm convinced of two things since coming here this morning. That there'll never again, probably in a long time, be a table with such a combination as this.
Mm-hmm.
We have an Army lieutenant, a man from the Navy, and a man from the Marine Corps, and I'm a Boy Scout.
Stand up, boy. The Boy Scout. I was a Boy Scout once.
Were you really?
You do your good deed every day?
I try my hardest.
Hmm? Let's see you give the salute. Good. Yes, sir. Let's give the Boy Scout a hand. What do you think?
I'd also like to tell you this. You know, there's oftentimes I've heard the question mentioned, what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very sure that I shall find out quite shortly.
Why is that?
Because the radio field and the motion picture industry is classed as the irresistible force. And I hope that I shall be the immovable object because I've come to California to see if I can get in either one of them. I'm supposed to be a singer.
You're supposed to be a singer?
Yes, sir.
Well, good, John. I'm a singer, too. Did you know that? Maybe we Scots can get together and crack the movies. Thanks a lot for coming around. What'd you say, dear?
Make him give us a sample.
Give you a sample? Well, we certainly do that. Yes, just a little while. What's your name?
Mrs. Garwood.
Mrs. Garwood.
Dorothy Garwood of Sunland.
From South Sunland.
This is my birthday.
This is your birthday?
80th birthday.
80th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, we might hear from you later, mightn't we?
We'll
save that, won't we?
All right.
I'm a stranger here, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, thanks, Johnny. Your name?
Mrs. Pratt.
Where are you from?
Mrs. From Sunland.
Sunland, too. And you?
Mrs. Emma DeTour from Guide Rock, Nebraska.
Nebraska. Hello, Nebraska.
Mrs. Loughran from Sunland, California.
From Sunland, California. Well, I'm glad to see you down here today, folks. You having a good breakfast?
Did. Very fun.
Where's my commercial, Johnny? Lost it. Where are those ladies going to help me out here? Well, ladies, say, I'd like to ask you a little question. Would you come up here just a little closer, please?
Surely. Love to.
What is your name?
Charlotte Moore, from Lido, Illinois, the biggest little city in Illinois. Oh, I wanted to get that in.
The Chamber of Commerce is going to be proud of you.
Aren't they?
Believe me. Are you as young as you look?
Sure I am.
Are you? I bet you just look younger than you are, huh?
So, well, that's for you to judge.
Well, do you think that most women are as young as they say they are, honestly?
Yes.
Hmm?
Yes. I don't think women lie about their age.
What do you think? Well, you know, some clothes aren't really as young as they look. You know that, too, don't you?
Oh, surely.
They just look younger because gentle ivory flakes care keeps them pretty up to twice as long. Did you know that?
Yes,
that's
sure.
True. You agree, don't you, Charlie?
I can back you up on that, Mark.
Yes, sir. Well, back up to the piano there, Charlie, and back me up right. What do you say?
Sweaters and blouses, lingerie, you've no idea how beautiful they can stay. They'll be lovely to look at, and all it takes is that ever-loving care with ivory flakes.
Oh, darling. Oh, you sound so slick and smooth, doesn't it? Say, Charlie, did you eat ivory flakes for breakfast?
I did, Mark.
Hmm? That's the reason. Well, folks, you know there's good solid truth back of the words of that song. And here's what I mean. In scientific wash tests made on those things Charlie was chirping about, on sweaters and house coats and blouses, it was found that when they were washed gently in ivory flakes, they stayed looking young and practically like new for up to twice as long. But when they were washed the wrong way with the wrong kind of soap, wow, they looked older than their age in a very short time. So never do that. And Charlie, didn't you say your girlfriend found out something else, too?
Hmm? My girlfriend found her pretty clothes, gave up to twice the wear, when she washed them oh so gently in ivory flakes.
You keep company with a smart girl, Charlie. And friends, listen, you'll be smart if you always depend on ivory flakes. The thin, gleaming flakes which are the flake form of pure, mild ivory soap. Switch to gentle ivory flakes care, and you'll want to chime in with Charlie and me and sing.
Ivory flakes, twice the wear. Ivory flakes, twice the wear.
Thank you, Charlie. Oh, it's a great life, isn't it? Hmm?
Oh. Yeah, I'll say it is.
Don't you think it's a great life?
I tell you, sure.
Well, don't be so enthusiastic about it. What's your name, sir?
Carlisle Larson.
Where are you from, sir?
Seattle, the best town on the Pacific Coast.
The best town on the Pacific Coast? Seattle! What do you know about that? Seattle is a wonderful town. What makes you think it's the best town on the Pacific Coast?
But it is.
Well, how'd you get down here?
Doubt about it. I just got to come down here to catch cold.
Oh! Well, we'll talk to you in a couple of more years. Who's this whistling around here? Right there? Huh? Is that you?
Mrs. Charles Wilson, Greeley, Colorado. Hello, Greeley.
Wait a minute. You're not allowed to do that, you know. That's direct communication. Who are you speaking to? The whole town? You know the whole town back there?
I surely do.
What's your name again?
Mrs. Charles Wilson.
Mrs. Charles Wilson.
Thomas Palillo from Providence, Rhode Island.
Sergeant?
Hello, Tenora.
Must be a habit at this table. Is there anyone you'd like to talk to? Huh? Who is this? Is this your wife?
Yeah, this is my wife.
Mrs. Ida Pulio.
Hello, Mrs. Ida Pulio. What's your name?
About Fairchild O'Fangman.
She knows how to talk in it. Don't you try to tell her how. She says, go on and speak in it. What's your name?
Eleanor Brisson from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I like to say hello.
This table is in an awful shape. Well, listen, I'll tell you. If when they allow on radio to say direct communication, well, then you can come back and say hello to your granddad. Is that all right? Huh? What's your granddad's name?
Robert.
How old is he?
86.
86? Is that so? Gee. What's your name, please?
Peggy Dawes, Compton, California.
Compton, California.
Betty Clark, Clearwater, California.
Clearwater, California.
Lila West, Clearwater, California.
Clearwater, California. She's bashful. Where are you from? What's your name, dear?
Please?
You get married like that, Johnny? Could I have your name, please? What's wrong? Does your husband think you're somewhere else? Hello.
Mrs. Waldershaw from Brookville, Ohio.
You have a good breakfast?
Sure did.
Brookville, Ohio. Hello.
Brookville, Ohio.
Brookville, Ohio. I beg your pardon.
Mrs. Doris Baldwin, Huntington Park.
Huntington Park.
Mrs. Harry Burt from Lake Minnetonka.
Lake Minnetonka?
On the shores of Lake Minnetonka. Mrs. Jay Gould, Sherman Oaks.
Sherman Oaks. Now we got them all, Johnny. Is that right? Oh, say, this is fun, isn't it? Huh? You having a good time? Well, ladies, that concludes our first portion of Breakfast in Hollywood, brought to you by Procter & Gamble's Ivory Flakes.
Ivory Flakes, twice the wear. Ivory Flakes, twice the wear.
Good, Charlie. Boy, we ought to make up a team, huh? Yes, sir. Ivory Flakes, twice the wear. Hey, Johnny, come here once. What goes now?
Well, I think it's about time to award the wishing ring, Mark.
The wishing ring?
I think we better shake it.
Well, let's have the wishing ring.
For one of those gals.
Who'd like to take the number for the wishing ring here? Let's get back here and get some of these folks we haven't met yet. You will?
Uh-huh.
What's your name?
Mrs. Robert Barton.
Where are you from, Mrs. Barton?
Port Huron, Michigan.
Port Huron, Michigan. And who is this?
This is Mr. Robert Barton of the same place.
Same place. Michigan.
Port Huron, Michigan.
Port Huron, Michigan. And what's the...
Chief Bosun Mate.
Chief Bosun Mate.
United States Coast Guard.
United States Coast Guard. Glad to see you here today, boy. Your name?
Charles Denny of Anderson, Indiana.
And who is this?
And Edward Denny, the same place.
Same place. Yeah, that's a good thing when you're married to be in the same place. Would you choose the number, please? Close your eyes. That's it. Might pick her own number. You can never tell.
I really could.
All right, ladies, here's the number for the wishing ring. 94256. 94256. Is she in the house? She didn't faint, did she? Had that happen one day, you know. Tom called a number and the woman said, "It's mine," and fainted. What would you have done? What'd you say?
Hello.
What else did you say?
I'd like to say who I am.
Well, say who you are.
Mrs. Vesenfeld.
Mrs. Vesenfeld?
Vesenfeld.
Vesenfeld?
Yes, from Canada.
From Canada?
Uh-huh.
Well, glad to see you here. Yes, a good neighbor from Canada. And your name?
Mrs. Olga Hecker from Orlando, Florida.
Tell me, you like California better than Florida? Thank you. We do, too. You do. And who is this?
Tina Shira.
Tina
from
Shira.
From Denver, Colorado.
Is that Mr.?
Mrs.
Oh, Denver. Got all the Denverites over in one corner this morning. You got enough breakfast? Don't be so bashful about it. It was good, wasn't it? Mrs. Tina Shira.
Shira, S-H-I-R-A.
Shira. And you have won the wishing ring.
I have.
Is that right?
That's right.
Oh, say, you're lucky, aren't you?
I am.
Are you here alone today?
No, my husband, sister-in-law.
That's your husband
and
sister-in-law back
there?
Well, hello, folks. I bet they're thrilled about you winning the wishing ring.
They are, and I know I am.
I bet you are. Have you ever seen our wishing ring?
No, I never have.
Isn't it pretty? Look at that. Isn't it pretty, ladies? Huh? Well, you know, it's a It's a very strange thing about this wishing ring.
Mm-hmm. It's made of what, dear?
Yes, dear. Beautiful, isn't it? I'll tell you, it's quite a tradition, you know, on Breakfast in Hollywood with a wishing ring. If you wish, when this ring is slipped on your finger, all of the ladies here and all along the party line wish along with you. And it always comes true.
I hope it does, but you've got to wish a good one.
All right, now will you tell us your wish?
I would like tickets for Jack Benny's show.
You know Mr. Benny?
I do not.
He didn't send you down here?
Never did.
Well, I wish it's easily arranged. Can't you think of something a little better than that? A little personal wish?
No, I think that's a very good one.
You'd like that wish?
I would like that wish.
Uh-huh. Well, what did you must have made a wish back home to be in Breakfast in Hollywood.
Well, I did.
Huh?
I did.
Oh, that's swell.
I've been here 2 weeks and gonna stay here a week longer.
You're gonna stay another week, huh? Well, I certainly hope you get your wish, dear. Now I'm going to slip it on your finger. All the neighbors wish along with us. Mm-hmm. You all wishing?
Yes,
it just fits.
It just fits. It sure does. Perfectly beautiful. I'm sorry I didn't get to see Tom, but happy that I got to meet you.
Well, thank you very much. And I'll tell Tom about that. And perhaps if you're going to be here another week, well, you can get down and meet Tom.
Well, I hope so.
He's a marvelous person, believe me.
Well, I think he is. We heard about that.
And you're going to see a different edition, too.
I am.
Yes, that's what something a lot of us are going to miss. You come back.
I have had a good time.
Certainly. And I'm sure you'll get your wish.
Very happy over.
Give my regards to all the folks back home. William? Well, ladies, for today's lesson in sports language, let's take up the baseball expression, power at the plate. Now, when folks say a team has power at the plate, they mean the team has batting power and punch. Something like the power at the plate of that smacking good cereal, Kellogg's Pep. A dish of those crisp, sunny whole wheat flakes carries a powerhouse of swell nutrition. For in addition to all the wholesome nourishment of whole wheat, famous for its fine food values, Pep brings you added amounts of vitamin D. That's the sunshine vitamin that helps develop strong bones and teeth. Just lend an ear to this. Even in wintertime, when sunshine hours drop off and youngsters often don't get all the sun they need, a 1 ounce serving of Pep provides their entire minimum requirement of sunshine vitamin D for that day. And Pep is no slouch either when it comes to vitamin B1, an important energy-producing vitamin. Yes, these crisp golden flakes give you over twice as much vitamin B1 as whole wheat itself. So you can see that Pep is a powerhouse, isn't it? That's a powerhouse breakfast food. Today, ask your grocer for a package of Kellogg's Pep. And tomorrow morning, let your folks stow away heaping portions. See if they don't agree. Pep. The mighty sunny side of breakfast, right on the beam, isn't it? Yes, sir. That's like getting all those vitamins. Now comes the time when we have the bids for our eldest guest, the eldest guest in the house today. Do we have any bids? What's the first night? 60? You were a little timid about that one, weren't you? 74? 75? 79? I know we have an 80 over here. Huh? 83 and a half. You got us down to fractions. 84? Where's the 84? Right there's the 84. Can anyone top 84? 84. 84 once? 84 twice? That's our eldest guest, 84. Will you come out, my dear? Thank you. That's it. Hey, you're nice and spry for 84.
Well, I'm pretty good.
You eat Pep for breakfast, don't you?
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah.
Mostly toast.
Mostly toast. Whole wheat toast, I'll bet. Hmm?
Yeah.
Well, that's why, yeah, you see, that's why Pep has so much pep. Gee, look at this. 84 years old. My goodness. I hope I have that much energy and look as young as that when I'm 84.
You do. I hope you do.
Thank you.
I've been
dear.
Very thankful that I've been as well as I have been.
May I ask your name, please?
Mrs. Etta Line, L-I-N-E.
Mrs. Etta Line.
Straight and plain line.
Straight and plain line.
Yes.
You're a truthful woman, Mrs. Lyon. That's what you meant, wasn't it?
Sure.
Where do you live, Mrs. Lyon?
We live down on Van Ness, South Van Ness Street.
You're
in Los Angeles.
From
now.
Los Angeles.
Yes, I was born and raised in Iowa, but I lived for about 20 years in Omaha.
You were born and raised in Iowa, and you lived about 20 years in Omaha.
Yes.
And how long have you been in Los Angeles?
About 3 years. A little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm. To what do you attribute your longevity?
Oh, I don't know. I just lived long and eat ordinary food and done my work, and I don't know.
Did you have a family, Mrs. Lyon?
Three children, two boys, girls and a boy.
Three children, two boys and a girl, or two girls and a boy?
Two girls and a boy. One of my daughters is here today, and my other one is in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. What are their names?
Well, the one that is here is, her name is Armstrong, the other
Armstrong.
One is Cunningham.
I'd like to get them all in there.
And
that needs grandchildren?
Yes, I've got eight.
Eight grandchildren?
Well, I've got 16 great-grandchildren. I have a great-son in the Navy, and I have one great-granddaughter that is married.
Is that so? Isn't that amazing? Let's give her a nice big hand. I'd like you to come over here. You know, you've won our orchid for being the eldest lady here today. And gee,
well, thanks a lot.
You certainly
sure appreciate it.
A sweet one, too.
Oh, well.
Isn't that pretty?
That's a beauty.
Isn't that pretty? I'd like to pin it on you. And I put it here, maybe I can put it on this pin. You've heard the program before, haven't you?
Oh, yes. I hear it pretty regular.
Did you ever have an orchid before?
No, my first orchid.
This your first orchid?
First orchid.
Mm-hmm. How long has it been since you had a kiss?
Oh, it ain't been too long, but... you don't take Tom's place in that, too, do you?
I take his place in that, too.
All right, I guess I can stand it.
Well, what did you say? Let's turn around this way so I can see a little better here. I think I have that pinned on right now. I want to kiss you on the other cheek. Let's go back and God bless you. 84 years old. Come back to see us, Mrs. Lyon. Say, neighbors, I would like to tell you about a neighbor of mine. This comes the time now when we read our good neighbor letter. It says, Dear Tom Brenneman, I would like to tell you about a neighbor of mine I think you will agree is deserving of an orchid. She is Mrs. Opal Bittner of Chesterfield, Indiana. She is known to everyone, young and old, as Mom Bittner. She is loved by all for her good deeds and thoughtfulness of others. She has a son in the service and, like a lot of other mothers, hasn't seen her boy for a long time. She works at one of the defense plants in Anderson, Indiana, but even so, she has found time to get groups together to go to our nearest hospital for veterans and take them candy and cigarettes and magazines. She has also formed a club for the smaller children in our neighborhood. They have parties and go on hikes and so forth, and she takes them all to Sunday school. Every Friday, the children all go to Mom Bittner's, and she always buys each of them a little gift. I wish you could see the children going to her house. I have a small son, and I know just how much good she is doing. I really think she deserves an orchid, and I hope you will feel the same way. And it's signed, sincerely yours, Mrs. Madeline Ashby of Chesterfield, Indiana. So, I think we agree, do we not? Huh? We're sending an orchid to to our good, good neighbor of the day, to Mrs. Opal Bittner of Chesterfield, Indiana. Too bad Corny isn't here today. Well, understand that he's out in Encino washing plates. Okay. My goodness, look at that time going. You know, every single one of us who has two strong, healthy legs should be happy to fall in line in the March of Dimes. The treatment of infantile paralysis is long and costly, and thousands of victims of that disease urgently need help. So remember, ladies, to send in your dimes to us, will you?
That's all the time we have, Mark.
That's all the time we have. We're sending orchids to Mrs. A. Ricker of Route 6, Box 740, Portland, Oregon, who was 100 years old yesterday, and also Mrs. Sarah Boswell of Columbia, Missouri, celebrate her 100th birthday Saturday. All right, ladies, get out the songs. I want to thank you once again for being such grand, grand folks. I've enjoyed being here. I know that Tom's going to be back very shortly. Let's get the songs out and let's get going.
Stay tuned for Kellogg's Home Edition, heard over most of these same stations immediately following the next announcement.
Say, ladies, here's a Kellogg exclusive that adds a distinctive touch to your breakfast menu. It's Kellogg's Crumbles, different in form and flavor. The crinkly shreds of finest wheat are toasted by Kellogg know-how to fresh, crunchy crispness and flavored by Kellogg's own recipe to hearty, mellow-rich goodness. There's whole grain nutrition in Kellogg's Crumbles, too. They're made from 100% whole wheat. Try 'em soon. Remember, there's only one Kellogg's Crumbles. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
That was a typical morning program for women, Breakfast in Hollywood, and it was guest hosted by Tom Brenneman's brother, Mark Brenneman. We'll continue with the breakfast theme now from the 1950s. It's Breakfast Club, and the temperature is falling.
From the beautiful College Inn Porterhouse in Chicago's famous Hotel Sherman, it's time now for your family to join the millions of families from coast to coast and listen to America's favorite Don McNeil and his Breakfast Club. And now here's your Toastmaster, Don McNeil.
Good morning, Breakfast Lovers. Morning to ya. Welcome back, Charlie. Just a hallelujah.
First call to breakfast for all of you out there.
America, wake the Breakfast Club is on the air.
Well, good morning to you. Glad to see you. This Wednesday is a little unusual because it's starting out at about 60 right now, and instead of going up like it usually does, the temperature is going down. Yes, sir. Now, this little gal, Ann Leonardo, who's singing for us this week, I believe you brought out in your conversation day before yesterday, Ann, that you also play piano.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Do you ever accompany yourself?
Yes, I do, quite often, Don.
I wonder if you'd like to try that on our show here.
I'd love to.
All right. Ann is wending her way now over to Bill Krenz's stronghold over at the piano there. And she's this cute little 19-year-old gal is seating herself there. She's, I'd like to describe Ann for you. She sits there at the concert grand. She looks very pert. She's got very dark hair, dark lashes. She has a lovely smile, white teeth, presumably your own. Is that right, Anna?
Yes, they are.
And she's wearing, what do you, is that a halter dress?
I think that's what you'd call it.
Huh?
A what? A jumper?
Really? Huh? Well, anyway, it's got suspenders on, like, and it's very cute and nice looking.
Thank you.
Now that you're at the piano, Anne, what are you going to do for us?
How about Everybody Loves My Baby?
All right, let's have it.
Everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me, and nobody but me. Everybody wants my baby, but my baby don't want nobody but me. That's plain to see. I am his sweet patootie, and he's my loving man. Knows how to do his duty, loves me like nobody can. That's why everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me, and nobody but me. Nobody can, that's why everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me, and nobody but me, 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 nobody but me.
Very, very good, Ann. Gal plays a good piano, doesn't she? Huh? And sings. Anne Leonardo. It's very cute. All right, let's talk to James Garrels of Hedrick, Idaho, Iowa. Margaret Ann Wilson of Montrose, Michigan. Rex Boucher of Sims, Indiana. Jim Graves from Swayze, Indiana. I got some assorted characters up here now. Let's see. Let's start in with the first one I call James. James, what's your last name, James?
Graves.
Graves. There's another James, too, isn't there? You?
Garrels. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your last name?
Garrels.
Garrels. You're from,
Hedrick, Iowa.
Hedrick, Iowa. Is mic working all right? Okay, I guess you're just speaking a little low. Would you speak up a little so that the waiting world may hear your beautiful pearls of wisdom?
Yeah.
All right, James. You propound an interesting subject here, and I think we'll discuss it with you and everybody else who's going to high school. What is the subject, James?
Oh, I want to know what my experiences would be like if I had my high school days to do over.
Yeah, knowing what you do now,
yeah.
And you would start high school over again.
Yeah.
Well, you answer that. What do you think, boy?
I expect they'd be some pretty good ones.
Yeah. Now that you know all about life and all.
Oh, I hope.
You know all about life, do you?
Oh, a little bit.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, I don't, so I'm very much interested in your viewpoints. Do you think, James, that's true? That do you think you'd really conduct yourself any differently, knowing what you do now after graduation?
Barbara? I don't suppose.
I don't suppose either. Probably make the same mistakes, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had a few.
Yeah. You didn't make too many mistakes going through school, though, did you?
Tried not to.
Yeah. You got a girl?
Nah.
That's what I say. You didn't make too many mistakes. Okay, James. Let's try that. Thank you very much. I'll try your question on some of the others, like Margaret Ann Wilson. Which is Margaret Ann? You?
I am.
Yes, I guess you must be. I'm a brain boy. I can tell. Margaret Ann, you are a senior.
Yes, I am.
At
Montrose High School.
All right. First of all, let's see what you wrote on your paper. What was that idea you had?
Well, I was wondering if you had an opinion of yourself, whether you would have an inferior opinion, which would it be better, inferior opinion or a superior opinion of yourself? Not neutral, either one.
I see. Are you asking me, for example, or anybody?
I'd like to know.
I see. You want to know whether you think, I think that you should have an inferior or an...
Superior
opinion of yourself.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, I think what you really mean there, don't you, is that it's nice... would you mind getting off the mic cord there? Thank you, boy. I had an inferior opinion to it just for a minute there. I think what you really mean is, are you able to evaluate yourself? Isn't that what you mean?
Well, I was just wondering if I should be, well, maybe think I'm humble or have a superior opinion of myself, have confidence in myself, or go along on my knees.
Well, you can do that. Now, Sam has done that for years. Everybody thinks he's walking. No, I'm just kidding about that. But I think you really got a point there. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think you got it. No, seriously, I think I know what you mean. Certainly no one likes someone who is stuck up in the vernacular. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Who has a superior opinion of himself. In other words, who thinks more of himself than the other people think of.
But again, you have to have confidence in yourself.
That's right.
Uh-huh. How do you get stuck in the vernacular?
What?
Where is that?
Oh, that's a great spot.
Oh, is it?
Oh, oh yeah, vernacular is near Montrose, Michigan. Montrose, Michigan, boys. How do you feel about it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm supposed to have confidence in myself.
Yeah. But you just got to have middle ground there, don't you, Mick?
You think you can strike a middle ground?
Yeah, I think you certainly can. Just like when you go to have your fortune told, you can strike a happy medium. And it's often a good idea. No, but I really think you can have a middle ground there. Just so your opinion of yourself is not much higher than the opinion other people have of you. I think you're just about right then.
All right, now thank you.
Try it anyway, huh? Okay. How do you feel about that? Do you think I was right? Or... I mean, that's quite a deep subject we were in there, eh? What's your name?
Jim Graves.
Yeah, Jim. What kind of opinion you got of yourself?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't either. I never met you. I mean, you think you're going to amount to much?
Can't tell yet.
No. But you have hopes, don't you?
Yeah.
I do, too, just looking at you. You're from Swayze, Indiana.
That's right.
And you're only in the eighth grade, aren't you?
Yeah.
You got high school to think of, and then what, do you probably be a farmer, do you think?
No.
No? What?
Oh, I don't know. I'd kind of like to be a doctor.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Just to show you that this guy's really thinking, and he may become a doctor after all. Here is a little joke. I'll be Sue and you be Bob. He wrote down a joke here. Sue and Bob, okay?
Okay.
I am Sue. I say to you, Bob, hey, Bob, let's think.
No, let's do something you can do, too.
Okay, thank you very much. Bye. Last night, I talked to Dick Noel, our ailing singer, and his charming wife, Eleanor, and I'm very happy to report that Dick's getting along very, very well, but his voice is still on the scratchy side, and he must stay in the remainder of the week and... nurse that voice along so he can be back with you next Monday. We were lucky to secure young Gary Mann to take his place this week. Young 22-year-old fella, sort of the Wilt the Stilt of of the singing profession at 6'4". I guess there aren't any taller singers than you, Gary.
Well, I'm not sure. I hope not. Because we go around saying I'm a tall singer, you know.
Yeah.
And eliminate some of the competition.
That's right. At least leads on the height angle, huh? What kind of an opinion you got of yourself, Gary?
Well, a middle-of-the-road type opinion.
Middle-of-the-road? You
run over that way.
At least he stays on the right line, probably. Anyway, yeah. I don't know. I think that's a pretty good way. In other words, you realize your potentialities and so on. You're not unaware of them. And yet you don't go around looking at yourself in the mirror all the time.
Well, I know my downfalls, too.
Yeah, that's so. Right. You mean your bad points as well as the good ones, huh?
Yes.
Well, one of his good ones is singing. Listen to this.
Never make eyes at the gals with the guys who are bigger than you. Stay in your class when you look at a lass. She may belong to some big palooka. Saying hello to a babe you don't know isn't healthy or wise. Now take my advice, besides not being nice, it can be bad for the eyes. If you do, look out for Mr. Bigger Than You. You'll be sorry if you tussle with a man of muscle. Don't ever wink at a gal with a gink who can take you and break you in two. No, never make eyes at the gals with the guys who are big, big, bigger than you. Get a load of that eye, boy, on big bad wolf. That's the lesson there, my boy, in social etiquette. You should not forget, 'cause if you do, look out for Mr. Bigger Than You. You'll be sorry if you tussle with a man of muscle. Don't ever wink at a gal with a geek who can't take you and break you in two. No, never make eyes at the gals with the guys who are taller and tougher and stronger and rougher and big, 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 bigger than you.
Hey, Gary. Okie dog. Now comes our moment of silent prayer. Each in his own words, each in his own way, for a world united in peace. Let us bow our heads and pray. It's memory time around the breakfast table. Don't know whether you saw this in the April 6th issue of the Saturday Evening Post. This short little tiny poem, you might have missed it, but it's something you shouldn't miss. Recollection of a Very Young Person by Georgie Starbuck Galbraith. Once upon a time, I knew all the answers. I was a sage pontifical youth, top-heavy with wisdom, for I was then privy to every secret of truth. But now, truth mutters to me in riddles. The difference, it appears, between omniscience and confusion is just about 20 years.
Lord, for making sunshine. Thank Thee, Lord, for making rain and for the mountains in all their majesty. Thy hands were gentle, Lord, making music. Thank Thee, Lord, for making love. And let me thank Thee for making birds that sing, for making
yes, it is march time now, and we're going to march here. Why don't you join us at home? Everybody, march. Thank you. They're all shook up. Sir.
I have a message for all the nice little boys and girls that marched with me today.
Fine.
Sit down.
Oh. Let's be nice to them, Sam. Let's call on Gary Mann again, should we? This young fellow here likes to sing. I think your voice is particularly suited to musical comedy type songs, don't you, Gary?
Well, that's what most folks have told me. I would like to get into musical comedy someday.
I think you'd be fine. They got one there on Broadway now called Little Abner. You'd never fit in that. But there are a lot of them that you could. Try Night and Day for us, huh?
Be glad to.
The beat, beat, beat of the tom-tom when the jungle shadows fall. Like the tick, tick, tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall. Like the drip, drip, drip of the raindrops when the summer showers through. So a voice within me keeps repeating, You, night and day, you are the one, only you, beneath the moon and under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are. I think of you night and day, day and night. Why is it so that this longing for you follows wherever I go? In the roaring traffic's boom, the silence of my lonely room, I think of you night and day, night and day. Under the hide of me, there's an oh such a hungry yearning burning inside of me, and its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.
Gary Mann. Well, sir, I enjoyed talking to that fella. I wonder what he thinks about Aunt Fanny. Let's get her in here, huh? Aunt Fanny. Come on now, be natural, Aunt
Fanny. Well, I intend to. I've always felt coming down here and sitting and talking with you that we was actually just sitting around the breakfast table.
Yes, that's what I
And if we are, what are all these people doing here? Well, looking around at the cast, awful lot of new faces here.
Yes.
I'll tell you, and the kind of new faces they are make it kind of tough on us old maps,
well,
don't
you? You're
it?
Not kidding, yeah.
Well, I had kind of heard that Mr. Noel has got the pip, is that right?
Well, he's got a bad throat.
A bad throat, yeah. Has he?
Yes.
My goodness. Mr. Ballantyne had a bad throat one time, wasn't that?
Yes, he did.
What was that? Oh, I remember the time Frau Frau got her hands around it. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that happens quite often.
Well, how is he getting? Is he better?
Oh, yes, I talked to him.
Well, that's too bad. Well, I don't mean it's too bad that he's better. I mean, too bad I didn't know about it before.
Oh.
Nettie had a medicine there that she always used to twist up for sore throats. It was made of onions and the garlic and brown sugar. I don't actually know what it done for the throat, but it kept people from offering more remedies because they just wasn't around. They wouldn't say. Why, this young man now that's here, who is he?
Oh, Gary Mann, isn't he?
He's a tall one, ain't he?
Yes, he is. 6 foot
Probably
one.
Has to bend over to hit high C. Pretty girl, too.
Yes, yes. And what? Dan Leonardo.
Oh.
She's from California.
From California? Whereabouts in California?
Fresno.
Oh, see. Nettie had a nephew from there.
Oh, really?
Ain't that where they have all the grapes? Yes, it is. I remember that. And he come out there and visited her a couple of years ago. I never will forget. Had purple feet. Well,
purple feet.
His blue suede shoes faded.
Oh, oh.
But it was. Yes. Well, you got a whole house full of young people here this morning.
Have a lot of them.
High school seniors, are they?
Yes.
Well,
a lot of eighth graders.
I wonder if the same thing, huh?
Oh, no. Four years difference.
Oh, they do more time to get to be a senior.
That's right, yeah.
Do they still have them high school plays that they used to have?
Oh, imagine
useful.
They do, yeah.
Well, I'll never forget the one that we had. If I live to be, I don't tend to get that.
No, I don't imagine that.
But anyway, you know all kinds of people that was in it. There was Nettie.
Well.
She was in it. There was, you've heard me remark about Delbart Dinglinger.
Yeah.
He was in it there. And then there was, Annie was in it.
Oh.
Her elbow flew out in the second act. Yes, but we caught it in the third.
Oh,
and it was all right. Homar Hodapp was in it. He was the villain.
Oh, really?
Yes, he got beat up something horrible. Well, we know he wasn't a good actor, but he's got the kind of bones that knit fast. So we had him in there. Then they was, he did last because his pants got caught on a nail and he went up with the curtain in the beginning of the third act. And then there was the lead, that was Verbena Moots, and oh, was she horrible. Just terrible. The papers come out the next day, and what they said about her acting, well, to the high heaven is actually what it amounted
for
to.
For you, Aunt Fanny.
Hello? Yes, now, you tell them about that play. I'll tell them about the horrible thing they said about the leading lady, and I don't remember that she got sick. But they run in a substitute? Oh! Never mind telling me who the stuff. I'll tell you when the talking gets that close to home.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, you know, I got such a kick out of some of these letters I get, like one from Mrs. James Thor of Arlington, Massachusetts. Said I was really feeling real blue this morning. And while making the boys' beds, I turned on the radio. There was the Breakfast Club. Now, I never turn the radio on at that time anymore. And what a pleasant surprise. What a flood of memories it brought back. It reminded me I am a charter member of the Breakfast Club. That must be, 14 years ago? Remember when you sent out cards for charter members? Well, I never missed Breakfast Club then, and I'm so glad I've rediscovered it. When I got my membership card, I always thought that someday I might possibly get to see Breakfast Club. The opportunity never came. And when I became a member, there was Durwood Kirby, Jack Baker, Nancy Martin, Harry Cogan, Marion Mann. My little girl, who used to march around the room with the Breakfast Club, is now 20 and married. And the baby, who used to bang on his high chair tray with a spoon while she marched, is now almost 15. Well, now that I've rediscovered Breakfast Club, you can be sure I'll once more become a faithful listener. It's like running into an old friend. Someday I just might get to see your program. Best wishes and so on. That's so nice when we find an old listener who's come back again to the Breakfast Club after all these years. And I'd like to hear from more of you like that, too. It's real refreshing. And just a real great kick to hear from you Breakfast Clubbers. Now it looks like last call to breakfast to me.
All you Breakfast Clubbers, this ends our meeting. Once again tomorrow, you'll hear our greeting.
Until tomorrow, then, Don McNeil and the whole gang say so long and be good to yourselves.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's an example of the Don McNeil's Breakfast Club from the 1950s, and that was from Chicago. Now we're going back to Hollywood for two more basically quarter-hour shows. It's called Behind the Scenes in Hollywood. The first one we'll have here is about sound technicians' role in making movies, and then a profile of Paulette Goddard.
By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
The sound technicians are among the most important people on the movie set today, and it is almost uncanny what some of these men can actually do.
Yes, and if a player blows or fluffs his lines, it is very often that the sound technician even knows it in advance.
Well, this item of contemporary science was discovered on the Kismet set at MGM, where Edward Arnold was working with Ronald Coleman. The dialogue was bouncing along when Jimmy Flaster, unit sound mixer, removed the beeps from his ears and shook his head. An instant later, Arnold stumbled on a word, and director William Dieterle yelled, "Cut!" The sound technician said, "I knew he was going to fluff that line, because he started speeding up. A sound man can usually tell about two lines in advance, because involuntarily he starts speeding up as he approaches a line that he isn't sure of."
Sound technicians know other things that no one else on the set knows, too. He may be seated 10 feet from the action or 100 feet, but his ears instantly record every particle of sound the microphone picks up. Much of it cannot be heard by a person standing directly beside the microphone or even by the players themselves.
And a sound technician will know if a player needs a drink of water, too. Very often a player's mouth will become dry, but he doesn't ask for a drink of water because he's afraid it will delay production or because he doesn't know that it is affecting his tones. But all this is picked up by the sensitive ears of the sound technician, and very often he must ask people to drink some water.
It does seem strange, but it is nevertheless true. The man sitting all day long in that chair behind the black control box with all its intricate knobs and wheels to indicate the volume of the sound being recorded knows more about the performer's state of mind and physical needs than they often do themselves.
With those Lucite beeps fitted onto his ears, and those beeps snapped into high-quality receivers, which are attached to the control box by wires, the sound technician knows about everything that is going on.
Now let's take a few production highlights from behind the scenes in Hollywood.
It looks like hair dyeing is about to become an epidemic among male players at Warner Brothers. First, Donald Wood's hair was dyed blonde for the role of Rosalind Russell's first husband in Roughly Speaking. And now George Coloris, as Joachim Helm in Hotel Berlin, is working with dyed hair. His is a reddish blonde for that hunnish glare effect. And something new in the way of a stand-in for child players has been introduced in Divorce, the monogram drama now in production with Kay Francis in the starring role. Billy Barty, 30-year-old midget, has been engaged to stand in for Larry Olson, age 7, who is cast as one of the children of Miss Francis. Manta Ray Yule has today's personality close-up. It's of Carol Landis.
Like most youngsters, Carol Landis was stage-struck at the age of 7, but at 16, she did something about it. She went to San Francisco, got a job in a nightclub, and made a hit as a singer. From that time on, until a recently completed role in RKO Radio's Having Wonderful Crime, in which she co-stars with Pat O'Brien and George Murphy, Carol has charted every step of her own career. Born Frances Ridsty in Fairchild, Wisconsin, she lived in San Diego and San Bernardino, California, before going to the Golden City to embark on her theatrical career. Being an ambitious and determined gal, she sang her songs, saved her money, and headed for Hollywood. Once in the film capital, she learned to dance, got a job in a musical, and was signed to a contract. But Carol wasn't satisfied to take just what came her way. She knew the importance of self-improvement and never let up in her effort to become a better actress. When the United States entered the war, Carol realized there was an important job to do. So she visited army camps in England, North Africa, and the Pacific, and blazed many a trail to army outposts deep in the jungle to entertain our troops. G.I. Joes dubbed her the pride of the Yanks. Carol is 5'5", weighs 111 pounds, and has blonde hair and blue eyes. She's planned her future just as meticulously as she planned her film career, and there's no reason to doubt but that it will be equally successful.
Now a word from your local announcer. By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
Time was when corsages, garlands, and table arrangements were made for the motion picture sets of real flowers. Then, when color films were made and the intense heat from the high-powered lights wilted the natural blossoms, paper flowers were used for the color films. But now, since paper shortage, Hollywood has had to turn largely to a substance not required by the war effort.
All of which now makes the flower situation on the movie set a very tickly situation, I understand.
Yes, and literally so. For in the production of Columbia's Technicolor Extravaganza, 1001 Nights, the blooms are made of feathers. Feathers were found to be the best way to fool the Technicolor cameras. They don't wilt under the terrific heat, they are not priority material, and they can be made to look exactly like real flowers. In fact, they are all right to everyone except the actors.
Yes, in one scene in that picture, Cornell Wilde was required to plunge his nose into a huge red rose which Adele Juergens had tossed him in a love scene. 3 times, director Al Green tried to shoot the scene, and on each occasion, Cornell sneezed and spoiled the shot. Finally, Green had the feather flower shaken well to thoroughly rid it of dust, and only then was Cornell able to make the romantic gesture for the cameras without sneezing.
Yes, and that's just one of the difficulties experienced in making motion pictures in this day of shortages.
Now, here are a few briefs about stars and pictures.
The human side of the fighting fronts will be brought to the screen by Warner Brothers in a new series of monthly releases under the title Overseas Roundup, it was announced.
Aquanetta just flew into Hollywood from Mexico City. She begins work immediately on Temptation, her first film under her new contract with Monogram.
Top roles in The Two Mrs. Carrolls have been assigned to Humphrey Bogart and Barbara Stanwyck. It's from the Broadway play by Martin Vale, with Mark Hellinger producing and Peter Godfrey directing. For our personality close-up, we'll tell you how Ronald Coleman's other plans almost prevented his movie career.
He came to the United States in the early 1920s during the depression in show business in England. Fate or destiny couldn't have selected a more fateful era in which to launch an acting career in a new country. For in those years, Rudolph Valentino, dark and handsome, was the world's screen idol, and the shy, sensitive Coleman had been appraised as dark and handsome, and something like Valentino. He found New York almost as tough as London had been, but he did manage a few stage roles. After a very precarious summer, he was given an important role in the Schubert production of La Tendresse. Lillian Gish and screen director Henry King saw La Tendresse and Coleman. They were then planning production of the motion picture The White Sister and needed a young man who looked like an Italian. They approached the young Coleman, but he turned down their offer. He pleaded other plans, but didn't reveal what those other plans were. 3 times he refused their proposition, and finally he decided that if fate was knocking so persistently, perhaps he'd better make just this one picture. The White Sister was a sensational success. Fans liked that dashing young fellow, Coleman.
Now comes the final touch. Coleman was not by nature a dashing fellow at all. He was shy, timid.
Well, how did he overcome this timidity? Coleman is known on the screen today as one of the most convincing of all portrayers of dashing, aggressive, alert, bold adventurers and swashbucklers.
Well, obviously, he had to conquer and overcome tendencies to make himself an opposite type of personality. He overcame his timidity complex by adopting a policy which would be good for most any of us. He said, "I found my fears came from indecision. So I made up my mind that I'd commit myself, one way or another, on every proposition that might confront me, and then stick to whatever decision I had made. And that's the way it is. And today, you can get a positive, immediate answer from Ronald Coleman on anything you submit to him. And now, a word from your local announcer. By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
While working on the Mitchell Leeson production, Practically Yours, Paramount technicians initiated a new transparency device for a 2.5-minute scene with Claudette Colbert and Fred McMurray.
In that picture, I have...
While working on the Mitchell Leeson production,
By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
Working on the Mitchell Leeson production, Practically Yours, Paramount technicians initiated a new transparency device for a 2.5-minute scene with Claudette Colbert and Fred McMurray.
In that picture, I understand, for the first time, a scene using dialogue was made wherein the principals move from a transparency background to a standing set in one shot.
Yes, using a camera boom, an 18-foot transparency screen, treadmill, prop tree, and a 70-foot replica of New York Central Park, this novel effect was accomplished. By bridging the transparency screen and the standing set with a prop tree, so that when Colbert and McMurray stepped down after 1 minute of dialogue on the treadmill, there was no noticeable transition, and they walked through the standing set for the subsequent minute and a half without a change in the camera setup.
New improvements in photographic technique and the skill of the set builders working with their amazing new transparency backgrounds are accomplishing effects believed impossible a short time ago.
That's right. And now for a few briefs and production highlights.
In Warner Brothers Roughly Speaking, Rosalind Russell sees her son off to war. She made it perfectly and without benefit of rehearsal, whereupon Michael Curtiz, her Academy Award director, exclaimed,
"Roz, how do you do it? Sometimes I've had to work with people for hours to get the kind of drama you've just given me in one take. I've never seen a more touching or convincing farewell."
I wasn't acting. I've seen my three brothers go, James to the Air Corps, George to the Tank Corps, and John to the Escort Service, and it hurt. While I was doing this scene, I began to feel again the ache of seeing them off. I just couldn't help reliving the whole thing all over again. Anyone who has said goodbye to a loved one leaving for the front could have done as well.
Today's personality close-up is about an old-timer who has just returned to the screen, Lee Tracy.
Yes, and Lee Tracy is Captain Lee Tracy now. 2 years of service in the Army did him a lot of good. He's not nearly so nervous as he used to be, but he still gestures with lightning-like rapidity.
Yes, and he's in fine physical condition, too. He mastered judo as part of his work in the Army, which was intelligence service against the Japs. His mind works as rapidly as his tongue. Usually, his eyes are darting here, there, everywhere, as alert as a bird in a cat-infested yard. He has a secret yen to write, which made his early newspaper reporter role seem like some sort of fulfillment. Stronger, however, is his interest in intelligence work, and that's what he gets in Betrayal from the East, RKO Radio's screen version of the Alan Hind expose of Jap-Nazi espionage. "The Army," says Tracy, "certainly trained me for this role in the picture."
Tracy doesn't like domesticity as such, though he loves his wife. What he hates is the rigors of housekeeping. He now owns an apartment house and lives in a suite in it. He'd really rather live in a hotel, but one does make concessions to one's wife. Above all, he hates to care for lawns and shrubs. He likes people, most of all. They're his hobby. Everybody's of interest to him, and he asks endless questions. And somehow nobody resents his nosing into personal affairs. A hypothetical but very typical Tracy question would be, "Now, lady, tell me just what you saw in your husband to make you fall in love with and marry him." And before she knows it, the lady's telling him.
Tracy believes that acting can't be done successfully without contact with the outside world. So he gets out into the world and studies people. Incidentally, he's rarely recognized because his screen mannerisms are absent. And now, your local announcer has a few words.
By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
You have a very good memory, one that reaches back to, say, the early 20s, when Eric von Stroheim first produced Universal's silent picture, Foolish Wives. And you have a great memory for detail. You probably be recognized in Universal's recent production, Frisco Sal, a very handsome carriage.
Oh, that was the carriage of Emperor Franz Joseph, which was brought to America by Stroheim for his picture and has been stored at the studio ever since.
Yes, it is the same historical carriage, a Victoria, and despite its non-use for more than 20 years, it is still in excellent condition. Just why it is never used again until director George Wagner dug it out of storage and is not exactly known. But I dare say there are countless valuable antiques, unusual pieces of furniture, queer set pieces and the like, which are gathering dust in more than one Hollywood studio.
The reason for this, no doubt, is that the directors are reluctant to use the same pieces too often. And then, too, many are so individually suited to certain productions that they cannot be readily used again.
Well, I'll bet a lot of people could get a big kick out of rummaging through the storage rooms of a Hollywood studio.
Now, here are a few briefs about Hollywood productions and picture people.
Jane Wyman has been making Technicolor tests for Time, Place, and the Girl, in which she's scheduled to play opposite Dennis Morgan and Jack Carson. Barry Lyndon, who wrote the amazing Dr. Clitterhouse, is scripting the Rita Weeman novel,
One Man's Secret for Warner Brothers.
Discretion should be exercised by women in copying screen styles, since very often what is fitting for a movie character is out of place in everyday life. So says Renee, the Hollywood stylist who has just completed a working girl's wardrobe for Lorraine Day in a recent film for RKO Radio. For those endearing young charms, Renee says, we did a typical business girl's wardrobe, gaining different effects by mixing jackets and skirts. And this type of change can be worked by anyone. But so many times we make things to emphasize a film role rather than for pure style, and that's when care should be taken in copying. Now, today's personality close-up is about Paulette Goddard. Nathan, do you think Hollywood stars thrive on flattery?
Well, according to best observers, most of Hollywood's egocentric stars do thrive on flattery. But Paulette Goddard breaks the rule. She wants to hear about her faults the minute they develop. It's for this reason the Paramount star has with her on every set of all her pictures expert drama coach Phyllis Loughton, former actress and New York stage director. It's her job to find fault with Paulette at every opportunity and then to offer suggestions that will make for a smoother performance or the better reading of a line.
But Miss Loughton's job as watchdog over Miss Goddard's work in no way clashes with that of the director of the picture in which the star is working. Mitchell Leeson, currently directing her in Kitty, feels that the personal coach system is one that every star in pictures could well use. Leeson says, a director has to keep in balance all the many elements of a screen or a production. Often he is watching the work of some supporting player at the moment the star does some little thing that could stand correcting. These are the things Miss Loughton watches for.
Yes, and Miss Goddard has used this personal coaching system since the earliest days of her career. Long before I'd had any chance at all in pictures, Paulette tells us, I was reading scenes to one of the greatest actresses and coaches the theater has ever known. My teacher then, and my occasional teacher now, is Constance Collier. She's helped me in more ways than any other person in the world.
Oh, then it is more than coincidence that Constance Collier has a leading part in Miss Goddard's current picture, Kitty.
Yes, says Paulette. She and Phyllis, too, will be right at hand to keep me in line in all my future pictures if there's any way I can bring it about. And she adds, if I ever begin to feel that I'm too good to learn, a few lessons, I want them here to tell me all about it. And now a word from your local announcer. By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
I have been asked many times how to make a screen test. Well, I know of one actress who broke into the movies by screen testing herself.
Well, that is certainly an unusual procedure. Who was that, and just how did he or she accomplish this amazing feat? There are a lot of movie-struck young women and some men yearning for that magic secret.
Oh, it wasn't as easy as all that. The actress was Oza Masson, and it was in London that she gave herself the screen test, which won her a contract and started her on the road which eventually led to Hollywood and featured roles, such as she had in RKO's recent picture, The Master Race. Then, too, Oza had to learn a lot before being able to screen test herself. For one thing, she had to learn how to swing a camera so ably as to become a professional photographer at the Palladium Studios in her native Copenhagen. Then, when her chance came, she prepared the script, coached the electricians on lighting, coached the cameraman, directed herself, and finally edited the resultant film.
Well, I don't recommend that as any shortcut to movie stardom, because it must have taken a great deal of study and hard work to learn all these necessary techniques just to give yourself a screen test.
You're right there. And she's the only person that I know of who has gone about getting a screen test in just that way.
And now for a few production briefs.
Edith Head will create the wardrobe for Ingrid Bergman in Leo McCarey's production of RKO Radio's The Bells of St. Mary's. Playing the role of a nun in this picture, Miss Bergman will be co-starred with Bing Crosby. Miss Head will, in addition, design the wardrobes for the other principal feminine players who will be signed later. For the first time in more than 40 screen roles, makeup is applied to the face of Ki Luke, Chinese actor noted for his portrayals of Charlie Chan's number one son in the Chan series. Luke in makeup portrays a Korean orderly in a Jap prison camp in RKO Radio's First Man into Tokyo.
For one of Lucille Bremer's dance dresses in Yolanda and the Thief, the Technicolor fantasy starring Fred Astaire, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Irene, used all of the material available for it on the North American continent. To achieve an airy, floating effect, the dress was made of the most fragile material known, French-manufactured soufflé. 50 yards of the gossamer-like cloth were used, representing the entire obtainable stock in the United States and Canada. And the dress weighs less than 1 pound.
Pee-wee King and his Golden West Cowboys have been signed for Flaming Frontier, Monogram's current Western special starring Johnny Mac Brown with Raymond Hutton.
Today, Nathan Hale is going to bring you the personality close-up of Nancy Kelly.
Nancy thinks theater, which means show business in general, is the world in which she was born and in which parents Jack Kelly, theater man, and Nan Walsh Kelly, actress, lived, and in which she has lived also. She's well-educated, speaks faultless English, knows literature, painting, music, and the fine arts. She's also very fond of sports, shoots golf in the lower 80s, rides well, and is particularly graceful on a thoroughbred jumper. She suffers keenly from acrophobia, never looks out of a window when she's in a tall building. Gardenias are her favorite flower, and the Moonlight Sonata her favorite classical selection, and, of course, she's superstitious. Walking under ladders and lighting three on a match are the deadliest hoodoos, she thinks. Knocking on wood, however, for her nullifies most of these hexes. Nancy always goes in for a film role with a wholehearted enthusiasm and thoroughness. For her U.S. counter-espionage agent in Betrayal from the East, she studies all sorts of spy fiction and non-fiction to get ideas about how spies act. She's 5 feet 5 inches tall, weighs a slim 113 pounds. She has dark blue eyes. She has a habit of looking intently at anyone with whom she is talking. She has the roadshow artist's happy-go-lucky philosophy. And now, your local announcer. By transcription, Bidwell McCormick takes you behind the scenes in Hollywood.
Very clever, these motion picture technicians. You just can't seem to get them into a corner that they cannot get out of.
I know they've pulled themselves out of some very serious situations. What do you have in mind now?
Oh, I was thinking of the instance very recently when director Michael Curtis found himself in a horrible spot while filming Roughly Speaking, the Rosalind Russell Jack Carson feature for Warner Brothers. He had shot all around a certain railroad station sequence, and then, when he finally got around to it, he found that the train could be pulled out only in one direction, and that was to the left, whereas to fit the story as filmed, it just had to depart to the right.
When negative film stock is rationed and time and labor are of such importance, he was in the spot.
Well, while Curtis was busy wondering just what he could do and how he could get away with tearing down half of the studio to make room for the necessary action, a property man brought forth a huge mirror.
So the scene was shot as reflected therein, backwards.
Yes. The film was then reversed for printing and everything came out right side up and perfect.
And now here are a few production briefs and items about what the stars are doing.
Allotment Wives has been set as the second Monogram feature to star Kay Francis and to be produced jointly by herself and Jeffrey Bernard. Rita Corday, Tahiti-born beauty of Swiss-French parentage, will play opposite Tom Conway in RKO Radio's The Falcon in San Francisco, the 11th screen story of Michael Arlen's Debonair Sleuth. Not only will Van Johnson and Esther Williams do their first dancing on the screen in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Early to Wed, but they'll also introduce a new dance. What's more, they'll sing to its music and in Spanish. The new dance is the Colombian Bambuco, a South American waltz or 3-4 rhythm, previously unknown to this country. Actually, it's a variation of the now familiar rumba.
In one of the lavish settings for Warner Brothers' forthcoming drama, Hotel Berlin was the loveliest bed. It sat upon a plush platform 2 steps above the floor. That silken draperies, it was colorful and ruffled, it was fluffy, it was lavish. In fact, it was out of this world, according to Miss King, who couldn't resist jumping kerplop right into the middle of it. But alas, there were no springs, just plain boards, and Miss King learned the hard way that there have been no springs in anything at the studio since Pearl Harbor. Hotel Berlin features Faye Emerson, Helmut Dandine, Andrea King, and many other favorites.
And today's personality close-up is of Robert Benchley. His plucky sense of humor was not recognized even at Harvard. nor until he had tried his hand at various occupations. He became drama editor of the Old Life comic magazine and later joined the staff of the New Yorker. His pungent comments won him a national reputation. Then he wrote several bestsellers, hundreds of short articles, appeared in a musical comedy on the radio, and in famous series of short film subjects. His work in feature pictures has made him enormously popular, and his recent credits include Janie, Practically Yours, and RKO Radio's latest tune film, Panamericana, in which he's a traveling magazine editor. He shares top honors with Philip Terry and Audrey Long.
He's also credited, I believe, as making the first all-talking film called The Treasurer's Report.
Yes. This short was made as an experiment to see if audience attention could be held for an all-talking picture. Just imagine, wondering if audience attention could be held for an all-talking picture. But that was better than 15 years ago.
I hope you enjoyed our nostalgic trip to Hollywood, and I hope you'll join us next week when we'll do it all over again with more new old radio material just for you. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.